going to talk about some extremely simple model and may give us some promising dark matter detection. And so my motivation, so here is the outline for my talk. So I will first discuss about some motivation. Probably everyone knows about the late hierarchy problem and also the late Higgs model. And then I will show one example to get familiar with the late Higgs model. And I talk about my own model. And I will first talk about the bosonic sector. Then I will talk about the fermionic sector. And it turns out that depends on the field contents in the fermionic sector. The some Z2 discrete symmetry can be broken or can be unbroken. And for the unbroken case, then we will have the dark matter candidate. And then I also calculated the radical abundance and then found that in this model it can satisfy the current radical abundance. And also I calculated the direct detection and found it's just one or two order of magnitude below the current experiment limits. So, I think we are studying some new physics beyond the standard model, and the biggest question is about electroweak symmetry breaking. In the standard model, it is described by the Higgs mechanism, and the prediction is that there will be some light Higgs boson. But there is another way to break the electroweak symmetry. That is through the dynamic symmetry breaking, like the Technicolor model, top Kanner model, or some working Technicolor model. So in the dynamic symmetry breaking, so there is no fundamental scalar field, and everything is just some bound state of fermions. So there is another puzzle, what that is the dark matter, which is observed in the universe. And the question is, what is the particle content of this dark matter? Is it a scalar, fermion, or gauge boson? And also, how does the dark matter couple to ordinary particles? And there are also some other puzzles, like the hierarchy of fermion masses and their mixings, and the large mixings in the leptonic sector versus the small mixing in the quark sector. So in this talk, I'm going to emphasize on the first two questions. One is the electroweak symmetry breaking sector, and then another is dark matter. And there may be some relation, some linking between those two items. So we first look at the situation in the standard model. And so in the standard model, we predict some light Higgs boson. And we ask what is the radiative quantum corrections to the Higgs boson mass. And there are actually three kind of one-loop corrections to the Higgs boson mass. And it turns out that the dominant contribution is from the top loop, which is quadratic divergent and proportional to the square of the top view curve coupling. So since it is proportional to the cutoff square, that means that if we have some new physics enters the loop calculation, suppose if the new physics is a grand unification scale, then there will be some huge problem to have a very light Higgs boson. And that is a so-called large hierarchy problem. And there are some models to address this problem, like the supersymmetry and the Technicolor model and the Rana-Sandra model and also large extra dimension model. But other than this huge, large hierarchy problem, there is another little hierarchy problem just based on the current experimental bounds. That is also called the leap paradox, observed by Barbieri and Strumia in 2000. And the puzzle is that the mass of the Higgs boson is less than 250 GeV, but the cutoff of some relevant high-dimensional operator should be greater than 5 to 10 TeV. So now if we put some 10 TeV as a scale of this cutoff, we will have, for the top loop contribution, the natural the latch size for the massive Higgs boson will be like 2 GeV, and it's like 1 magnitude larger than the mass of this bond. So that is the late Hark problem. And the late Higgs model is proposed to solve this problem to some extent. And it is proposed by Kelly Hamm, Cohen, and Georgia in 2001. And there are two basic idea conditions you need to satisfy to construct a late Higgs model. The first one is identify the Higgs doublet as a Schuder-Lambo-Goldstone boson of some spontaneously broken global symmetry. And the later another condition is that there should be some the symmetry breaking should be. The second condition is that the global symmetry should be broken by turning on two or more than two couplings at the same time. So that's called a connective symmetry breaking. And so the consequence is that if we go back to the previous those diagrams, then there will be this kind of a cutoff. Square dependent part will be cancelled by some other loops, such that there will be only a logarithmic divergent potential for the Higgs doublet. And then the fine tune for this Higgs boson mass will become much better, like probably from 1% to 10%. Okay, so now I show you one example to get familiar with the late Higgs model. So suppose we have the global symmetry to be U3, and we want to break it to U2, and we can choose a triplet, and let the triplet develop a wave like 0, 0, 1, and this can break U3 to U2. And you can do some counting by counting how many unbroken or broken generators, and you will find that there are 5 Goldstone bosons, and you can identify those five Goldstone bosons as the some representations of the U2 unbroken symmetry, and you can find one is doublet and one is singlet. So here we can parameterize the original field phi as those Goldstone bosons. Here I only write down the doublet part, and there will be some singlet part as well. So now if we using some U cover coupling to explicitly break the global U3 symmetry. And one way you can do is that you introduce some another triplet of U3 and write down like a Q and a psi, and a Q is a doublet of U2 and the psi is a singlet of U2. And then you look at you can first write down this operator, which will be U3 invariant operator. Then you can also write down another operator using using the singlet part of this triplet and couples to another singlet. Then this operator will explicitly break the U3 symmetry because this operator treats the doublet part and the singlet part differently. So in some sense, if I look at those two operators and if I set Y2 to be 0, then I will recover the global U3 symmetry. So on the other hand, if I set Y1 to be 0, then in principle you decouple the phi field to this scalar field to those fermions. You also like decouple the coupling of Goldstone bosons to fermions. So in some sense, finally you need both coupling exist to break the U3 symmetry and also to give some couplings for those Goldstone bosons. And so here I can substitute this parameterization into those two operators, and I can do some expansion and get some coupling of the Goldstone boson Higgs doublet comes to those fermions. And you can see that other than this you cover company, ordinary you cover company, there will be some higher dimensional operator, dimension 5 operator, which is proportional to y1 over 2f. Okay, so now you can do the quantum correction to the Goldstone boson field H. And so now if we look at the previous companies, and you can see that there are two diagrams to contribute to the mass of Higgs doublet. So one is through this loop, another one is through the dimension 5 operator. And you can check that there will be some cancellation between those two diagrams, for the at least for the quadratic divergent part. Okay, so this is a diagrammatic way to look at this part, this way to cancel the quadratic divergent part. But there is also some more straightforward way to do that, is that you express those fermions, the mass of those fermions as a function in terms of the classical field of this Higgs doublet, like the following way, and then you use the one-loop effective potential developed by Komal and Weinberg in 1973, and here is the formula, and you plug this formula, and you can see that there will be some quadratic divergent part which is proportional to the trace of the fermion mass matrix, and you can check that the trace of this matrix will have a sine square plus cosine square, and finally this the quadratic divergent part will be independent of the Higgs boson field. Then it will not generate any mass term, quadratic divergent mass term to the Higgs doublet. But there will be some remaining part, which is the cutoff logarithm dependent part, which will contribute to the Higgs boson potential. But that is not too bad for the fine-tuning problem for the to get some lighter Higgs doublet. Okay, so roughly the previous example just to show you how does it works in the fermionic sector in the late Higgs model. So what happens in the bosonic sector, for example, in the Gauge boson sector, the story is the following, that you have some loop contribution to the Higgs mass through WZ and the photon. And the usual story is that you put some W prime and Z prime, some new extra massive Gauge bosons to cancel the standard model contribution to for the at least for the quadratic divergent part. So that's the usual story. So and we can here I list several Gauge symmetries in the various late Higgs model. So here I didn't include the SU3 color Gauge symmetry. That is universal for every model. So you can so in the weak Gauge sector, in the minimum most model, you have SU3 times SU2 times U1. In the later list Higgs model, you have SU3 times U1 and double. And also you have the simplest Higgs model to be SU3 and U1. And all of those models, late Higgs models, predict Z prime, W prime, T prime, the partner of a top quark. And also sometimes in order to cancel alumni, sometimes they also predict some partners of some other light quarks. And also sometimes there will be some triplet or singlet scalar fields. So that's a story for the traditional late Higgs model. So so in my work, what I'm thinking is about can we use some of the minimal extension of the standard model Gauge group, which will be other than the SU2 times U1, just put another U1, and can we cancel the Gauge loop contribution to the Higgs boson mass? So in some sense, you only need to have some Z prime, so there will be no W prime in this model. And the big question is should be asked is what kind of symmetry for this cancellation if you only have some Z prime. Okay, so here I show you that if I choose the Gauge group to be SU2 times U1 times U1, and I choose the Higgs doublet to be charged, to have the same charge under those two U1s. But the singlet part, the another SU2 singlet field, which has opposite charges under those two U1s. So, and I choose some 5 over 3 and 5 some discrete relational charge here. And it may be explained by if I embed, try to think about some UV composition of this model. But here in the current lecture, this talk, I will not talk about anything about how can I get those numbers. So, so then you can see that you can write down the kinetic term for those two scalars, H field and S field, like the following way. And so other than those charges, I also make another assumption is that since I have two U1 symmetries, and I assume those two U1 symmetries have the same identical gauge copy, which is G1, G2, and also after some normalization, it's a proportion to the square root of 2 times G prime, and G prime is the gauge coupling of the U1 hypercharge in the standard model, and the G is the gauge coupling of SU2 weak. So then I can calculate what's the quadratic divergent part contribution to the scalar masses from gauge bosons. And here I show you the formula. And so there will be some quadratic divergent part contribution to the mass of doublet, and also as well as the singlet. And what I found is that, so if I choose this chart, 5 over 3, and I if plug in the sine theta W, the weak mixing angle experimental value, and I can see that there will be some approximate formula like the following, some common coefficient and H dagger plus SS dagger. And so I can write down the H and S together as a triplet of some U3 symmetry. And so you can see that the quadratic divergent part will have some approximate U3 symmetry. And I think that this kind of approximate U3 symmetry can explain why in this model there is no quadratic divergent contribution to the Higgs boson mass in the gauge sector. And so this kind of idea is, I think the first people think about using this way is the Twin Higgs model by Chappell, Pro, and Harnicke in 2005. So in their case, they have some two Higgs doublet with identical gauge coupling, and then they recover some approximate SU4 symmetry or U4 symmetry in their case. Okay, so so then the next step, so after find out what's a accidental or global approximate global U3 symmetry, then we can start with the representation of U3, let's say phi, which is can be written as the previous doublet and singlet like this way, and then we can think at 10 TeV scale or some little bit higher scale, the phi field develops a wave proportion to 0, 0, 1, and
Could we just go back? I mean, I think that something that seems different to me about this compared to the little Higgs or sort of twin Higgs thing is that in those if you just quadratic divergences, if you just know the low energy theory, even the coefficient of the quadratic divergence is not really well defined. You know, I mean, for example, you know, because it depends on some regulator, and the regulator might be different. You might use a different regulator for H fields and S fields, for example. It's only when you have something like in the twin Higgs theory. I mean, the easiest case is supersymmetry, right? Supersymmetry. There's symmetry in the UV theory that tells you what you mean. what regulators are physical and which ones are not. They're the ones that are invariant under these symmetries. And in twin Higgs and little Higgs, it's the same way. There's a larger symmetry that actually makes this cancellation of quadratic divergences well defined. But if you don't have such a symmetry, I don't think it's really well defined.
So here?
Yeah.
So in this language, you can argue that you may choose a different lambda 1 for this one, lambda 2
yeah.
for that one.
Right.
But I'm just saying that here I just show you how can I recover some approximate U3 symmetry. So later on I will show you that I start from exact U3 symmetry, but I only use gauge coupling to explicitly break this one, this global symmetry.
Okay, so that would be fine. I mean,
okay.
I'm just saying
yes.
This by itself, it's not clear to me unless you have some UV completion that justifies this.
Yeah, I understand.
That's my
Yeah, because if you treat the gauge coupling pervatively, then if you start with some global symmetry, then I think you should use the same cutoff when you do the calculation.
Then, okay, but then
I
wonder about large logs, but
yeah, large log for sure. It's okay. Okay, so the file has some wave like this, and it spontaneously break the U3 to U2, and also break the gauge symmetry from this product gauge symmetry to the standard model gauge group. So below the cutoff, we have five Goldstone bosons, and one is eaten by one linear combination of those two U1s, which become massive and defined as B prime to be this linear combination. And then there another four becomes PNG piece and identifies the Higgs doublet. And there is no other extra scalar field in this model.
Sorry, so can I come back?
Mm.
So you're saying, maybe I didn't quite get your understand your answer to the last thing that you said in answer to my question. So you could assume that there is some strong dynamics, for example,
right.
in 10 TeV that literally has that U3 is a symmetry that's only broken by the weak gauge couple.
Right.
That's
yes.
what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now there I have another question, which actually goes back to the sort of introduction to your introduction to little Higgs, the way you talked about it, I think, was kind of incomplete. I mean, you were talking about it as if the whole point is just to get the quadratic divergences to the Higgs mass to cancel.
Yes.
But that's really easy. You don't need twin Higgs for that. You can just have a pseudo Goldstone boson, period. You don't have any large corrections to the mass, okay, if that's all you demand. The problem is that you also don't have any large quartic, right? So if you have a pseudo Goldstone boson, it has a small mass and a small quartic, and its BEV is naturally at the cutoff. So that was something that's a point that you didn't mention. That's really what little Higgs does. That's it actually allows you to have naturally a small mass, but not have the same suppression for the quartic coupling. So you agree? I mean, are you with
so I agree with the quartic part, but
yeah.
I would say that. If you only have some Goldstone boson, so this will not work for the standard model because you need. We have the Higgs doublet which couples to, couples to the ordinary standard model fermions. But if you use pure pseudo Goldstone boson without any explicit symmetry breaking, then it can only have a derivative coupling to fermions. In some sense, you need to break this symmetry.
So I mean, you're solving, in a sense, then you're solving a lesser problem than the original little Higgs models. Anyway, you're just saying your job in life is to cancel the quadratic divergence from the top quark, and you don't care about anything else. Is that right? Because if that's what you're saying, then it's true that if you just put in a pseudo and you just couple it to the top quark, then generically you will get quadratic divergences to the mass from the top quark coupling. And you're just canceling that. You're not worried about natural electroweak symmetry breaking.
Oh, I'm also worried about that. I see.
So then
yeah.
you have to worry about
the
quartic.
Yes, yes. Sure.
So I'm wondering if you're going to address that, or since you didn't mention it in your introduction,
okay.
I'm just wondering if you're going to get
oh, sure.
that.
Sure. Finally, sure, when you minimize, when you break the electroweak symmetry, you need to consider the mass term and the quartic term at the same time. So
okay.
I see. Yeah, maybe I should emphasize that. Yeah, so then we can do the standard procedure to calculate what's the potential for the Higgs boson field. Now it identifies the Schröder boson boson. And you can see that you can express the Gauge boson mass matrix as a function of Higgs doublet and plug it into the one loop invertible potential like this way, and then you can identify do some expansion in terms of a small H field, then you can identify what is the mass of this H field. And here I write down the formula like the following way, and then there will be some cutoff square dependent part, which is with some point like this, and also some logarithm dependent part. And then the mass of B prime is 0.8. F is the wave for phi, indicates the scale of underlying dynamic. Okay, so the point here is that because of those charge assignment in the scalar sector, if the sine, and you can see that if the sine w square is close to 0.23, the cutoff square term is even smaller than logarithm divergent part, and here I show you what's the numerical value for those two terms, and see that and for those choices of numbers.
So the 5/3 was chosen as the
simplest rational number, and right
makes the first term smaller than the log.
Yes. So that is for the so now we can construct write down the whole field of this model, and so the other than the singlet scalar field, we only need to introduce another vector like fermion called psi L psi R, and in order to have the to mix with the top part, you need to have this charge assignment. But that this so then you can write the Yukawa coupling in the top sector, like the following way. So remember here, at the beginning I introduced some Z2 interchange symmetry between those two U1s. But this kind of fermion assignment will explicitly break this kind of Z2 assignment, because there is no minus 7/3 charge assignment for some scalars. In some sense, this Z2 symmetry is manifestly broken at this stage. But anyhow, so you can write down the minimum Yukawa coupling based on this field content, and then you can calculate what is the Higgs boson masses from the top sector. And then here, since this is like a traditional data Higgs model, you have the kinetic symmetry breaking mechanism to protect the quadratic divergent contribution to the mass of Higgs boson. So then the only logarithm divergent part appears for the mass of Higgs boson here. And the spontaneously electric symmetry breaking is induced by this minus sign from the from top sector. So minimize this potential, we can get the latter Higgs boson below 200 GeV. So here I would say that you can use the
So can I ask, if you had the strongly coupled case,
yes,
right, so you have this you have this, this, as you say, some U3 symmetry, and it's broken by gauge couplings.
Mm.
And that picture in the nonlinear realization, instead of talking about these quadratic divergence, I could just use the gauge charges to write the possible terms where the gauge couplings break the U3 symmetry. And that would then give me the potential, at least the dependence on the charges and couplings. And that would reproduce this quadratic divergence calculation.
Right.
Is that right?
Yes. In some sense, you definitely can write on operator to.
So that's equivalent to this, at least for as far as the low energy.
So okay, so then we can analyze the spectrum of this simple model, and we can identify what is the left-handed part of the top quark and what's the right-handed part of the top quark. And you can see that there will be some large mixing between the right-handed part top quarks. So there will be some large mixing between T and the psi group eigenstate. And also, so in this model, other than there will be some new massive Z prime or B prime. I call it B prime, and which covers to T right and T right prime with order one couplings. So at tree level, only experimental unmarried top quark comes to W and the Z boson are changed in this. In this model without a exact Z2 symmetry. And but at one loop level, so we can consider what's the strongest electric precision test for this model. So the possibility is that there is some T parameter. And I write down the formula for the T parameter. And in order to satisfy the current PDT data, which is 1.2 times 10 to the minus 3 for a pretty light Higgs boson. So you can easily satisfy the bound, and then you can just put the ratio for some U cow company in the Lagrangian to be slight, or still order 1, but slightly 3 over 4. So then they're almost a low bound for the symmetry breaking scale. F. But so then we can have the symmetry breaking F to be as low as 400 GeV. For sure, we still need the cutoff to be 5.5 T in order to suppress some high-dimensional operator. So from this point of view, this model is a little bit different from the traditional Higgs model without T parity, because for that case, you need the bound for the F will be like 2 or 3 TeV at least.
The B prime doesn't cover to third order parameter.
Right, and so the B prime only covers to the top quark in some sense in this model. But it's not true for their model because they have W prime in some sense. And in order to cancel the alumni, they have to put there will be some coupling between Z prime and the light fermions. Okay, so in this model we have only two new parameter, one U cow copy and another is the symmetry breaking scale.
Sorry, what would happen to those other models if I just reached into the Lagrangian and turned off the Z prime coupling to the light quarks? It would still work, wouldn't it?
I would say because
I just don't understand why any little Higgs model would require you to have a Z prime coupled to light quarks.
That's one of two characters.
It's because it's somehow exact T parity.
Yeah,
can that be explained to without going to a blackboard, or is that some complicated thing?
Yeah, the problem is T parity to turn off that coupling.
Or to turn off that coupling.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, I mean, if I'm not really concerned about UV beauty and I just take some working little Higgs model and I just choose the Z prime charges, is it because that Z prime is really embedded in some bigger group so I can't just fiddle with its charges? The Z
no,
prime is
set up group and the Z prime is a linear combination. So
and they kind of
have a fermion transform to sound very widely.
Is the Z prime part of a non-abelian group? Is that why? Or is it the remnant of a non-abelian?
For example, you just have SU2 plus SU2.
Yeah.
You have to have a diagonal.
Yeah.
And then Z prime, which is the linear.
Okay. Okay. I think I'm. Thank you.
So in this model, I have two parameters and I have only two new particles. One is B prime and another is T prime. And the mass of B prime is 0.8 times F, and the T prime is 2F. So if we choose a small electric symmetry breaking scale F, 400 GeV, then we can have some very light B prime to be consistent with current data, because it only covers the top part. So then we can ask what kind of how do we produce this B prime? It can only through some one loop diagrams like this, through gluon, gluon, the gluon, and B prime. So there is no triangle diagram for this one. Is that suppressed? That is forbidden by the Young theorem. So I think the signature will be looking for some TT bar plus one gluon for this one. Okay, so that is for the Z2 broken case. So there is also the simple way to construct a model which keep the Z2 symmetry. So that's first proposed by Lo and Zhen 2003. And we can introduce just two more vector-like quarks. So above this line, that's the model in the broken case. Now, below this line, we introduce two vector-like fermions. And now you can see that if you have a charge like this way under U11 and then U12, and you have the opposite charge like this way, so then you can keep the Z2 symmetry as an exact symmetry. And also, the gauge alone is cancelled in this case. So then we can write on some Yukawa companies using those field content table and you can check that write down some copies like this, and you can check that under the Z2 transformation, we can have just interchanging 1 and 2. Basically, just changing 1 and 2, and for the gauge boson, you change the B1 gauge boson to B2 gauge boson. And for the signaling scalar field, you just change S2 S dagger. And you can check that this Lagrangian is inverted under this definition of Z2 symmetry. So this Z2 can be exact. So that means that all particles should be Z2 eigenstates. And we can see that there are some Z2 even particles, and we call it, so this is the ordinary top quark, has a mass eigenstate in terms of those group eigenstates like the falling away and the mass of top like that. And we can also have T prime class, and has a eigenstates and the falling away. And the quotient contribution to the Higgs mass from top is cancelled by this Z2 even particles in this model. And also, all other standard model particles are also Z2 even. And there is some Z2 other particles. So one is called T prime minus, and R is Q prime minus, which is a doublet. And their mass is proportional to the Yukawa coupling times F. And there is the gauge boson B prime, which is 0.8F. So in some sense, if we have a Y2 Yukawa coupling to be a little bit bigger than 1, then we will have the B prime to be the lightest Z2 other particle, and it will be a potential dark matter candidate in this model. So now I'm going to check whether this model works for the Rydberg abundance. So from WMF, we know that the Rydberg abundance of the dark matter should satisfy omega times H to be within this window. And in the long relativistic limit, this omega times H is relation to sum of this quantity, which is A equals to the relative velocity between those two dark matter candidates, and times the annihilation cross section of this dark matter candidate into x and into standard model fields. Now x can be any channel which is possible in your model. So there will be some simple formula, approximate formula for the omega h in terms of this quantity called a. And in order to satisfy the current experimental data, so the only thing needed to calculate is a total, and require a total to be around 1 gigabar. So, okay, so before I show you some results, so here I want to emphasize that there is some difference between this latex, minimal latex model and some other dark matter candidate, like the latest Higgs model with priority and the UED model. Because in their model, the dark matter candidate is really hypercharged like a Gauge boson. And you can check what is the coupling between the dark matter candidate B prime and to the Higgs boson. Because this coupling will be crucial for radical abundance calculation and also for direct detection. So, and so there will be, so for this model, the coupling is like 50 over 9, but for those models, it's 1 over 2. So in some sense, there will be some a factor of 10 difference between those two models. And then that this kind of a factor of 10 is coming from the charge assignment of this model. And also, it's the crucial quantity to cancel the quadratic divergent part from this B prime contribution to the Higgs mass quadratic part. And so in some sense, there may be some relation between that cancellation and enhancement of some direct detection for this dark matter candidate. So for the radical abundance, the kneading processes for B prime for this dark matter candidate annihilation into standard mode particles will be like B prime goes to Gauge boson, standard mode Gauge boson channel, and also some. So this is a top and top quark. So there are basically those two channels. So this is a bosonic channel, which have formula like this, and this is a fermionic channel like this. So if some UCAL company is pretty large, maybe large enough, one, if I say two or three, the fermionic channel is negligible. So then you can see that in order to satisfy this A total should be around 0.8 picobar. And from this formula, you can see that you only need to have the mass, it will give some constraints to the mass of B prime. And so here I show you the coupling and the mass of B prime in order to satisfy the current radical abundance. And so in some sense, the conclusion is that like in this model, in order for this dark matter candidate to be the only dark matter candidate, then you need the mass of this B prime to be 1.2 TeV. So, okay. So now I'm going to the direct detection. So the direct detection of dark matter is to measure the recoil energy in the elastic scattering of dark matter particles with nuclei. And in this model, the main contribution will be through this T-channel Higgs boson exchanging to ordinary matters or nuclei. And because this Higgs boson is a scalar field, so only contributors to a spin independent cross section for those two diagrams. And we can use the matrix element of quarks and gluons in a nuclei state. And there is some data you can find from this paper. And you can plug that, and you can get the spin independent cross section as a function of the mass of the B prime, the dark matter candidate, and also as a function of the Higgs boson mass as the following. And here I write it down that the to be 1.6 times 10 to 44 centimeters square, and in terms of 1 TeV dark matter candidate and 100 TeV Higgs boson mass. So other than this is the independent cross-section, so there will be some other box diagrams with the top part propagating in the loop, which also contribute to a spin-dependent cross-section. But here I will not show you the result for the spin-dependent part. So for the direct detection, and here I show you what's the... So here, the blue line, this blue solid line is the CDNS 2006. And this is a red line, is Xenon 10-2007. And this brown line is CDNS February 2008. And this dotted line is the Super CDNS. And so, and this green line is this model, the prediction of this model for the Higgs boson mass to be 120 GeV. And this yellow line is this model for the Higgs boson to be 160 GeV. And you can see that at least for this model, for the lighter dark matter candidate, for lighter mass, you can see that this line is pretty close to the current experiment bound. And it may be accessible for the next generation of dark matter direct detection.
In this line, you assume that the dark and the B prime counts for all the dark matter?
Yes.
So, but for that to be true, you need it to be 1.2 GeV. So.
But it's, so suppose I think that there will be some other dark matter candidate
so
together.
This line you basically assume, for example, to pick M B prime to be 500 GeV.
Yeah.
And you assume all dark matters are B prime, but then that means your thermal relative density. It cannot be accounted by just thermal relative density.
Right. I agree with you.
There's some self-inconsistency. Well, it happens in all that. I think it's all dark matter plot. Just try to
understand. Yeah, in some sense, yeah. When we talk about some direct detection, in some sense, most cases we separated from the radical balance in some level. But you need to check whether it's over, close, it's too much. If you get the radical balance cross-section too big, then you should worry. So I'm going to do a summary. So I think some very simple analytics model can be constructed just based on SU2 times U1 phase symmetry. And here I introduce some Z2 interchange symmetry between those two U1s. And for the Z2 broken case, the prediction of this model will be B prime and T prime. And this B prime can be as light as 300 GeV, and it can decay to top quark. And for the little unbroken case, the B prime will be a stable part and can serve as a dark matter candidate. And then the direct detection of this B prime dark matter is promising. And also the direct detection, spin independent direct detection cross section of B prime interacting with the nuclei is 2 orders of magnitude larger than a hypercharged like a neutral gauge boson dark matter candidate. Thank you.
So could you do it with just SU2 cross U1? So it's not obvious to me that not everything that you did, but just the thing of having the small, I'm just thinking out loud, so it's going to be totally stupid, but just the thing of having the accidentally small quadratic term, right, from the gauge boson break. Let's say you had some U3 symmetry, right, and then you have some weird U1 hypercharge charges. Don't worry about anomaly cancellation or anything like that.
No. So wait a minute. So if you say the gauge group is SU2 times U1,
yeah,
and what is a Higgs boson? So that the only choice is.
No, it's a U3 mod U2. So it's, I'm assuming there's a code set, some strong breaking of SU3 down to U2.
You're trying to say the Higgs doublet will not have the standard mode gauge charge under SU2 times U1? Right.
Charges, yeah,
yes.
You won't get the.
You
want to
get
the.
Right. Yes.
So this really is the minimal thing.
Yes.
What charge would you need to make it exact cancellation? Is it a rational number or not?
It's a it's an irrational number.
Well, it's involves sine squared.
Yeah, it's, it involves G2 and G prime in some sense.
We don't know experimentally whether the sine squared theta is rational or irrational.
But if you embed it in a
more accurate.
Yeah, in the large. Yeah.
It still runs. It runs, so it's got pi's. Yeah, I mean, I was trying to think about other effects that, you know, since you have a fairly accurate cancellation,
mm-hmm.
you may worry that about higher order effects that you normally neglect to see whether they can screw that up. I think you're probably okay. I mean, for example, I was trying to think of something, couldn't think of anything. I mean, one thing you could worry about is you in the low energy theory, you would have terms that have both the weak charges in them and derivatives. And what they would do is they would mix the fields in ways that depended on their gauge charges, right? But I think those effects are all 1%, which is probably the level of the cancellations you have here. But have you systematically tried to do this? I mean, in the low in the nonlinear signal model, for you
write down all the operators like that.
You could write down all of the next order operators. Since that one's accidentally small, you might want to just check that if you assume that the next order ones all have their natural size, they don't upset this thing. So I don't know. Have you looked?
No, I didn't look at it.
Yeah. I think you're probably okay because the natural suppression of the next order is, you know, at the Higgs mass is roughly the Higgs mass over, you know, over a TeV squared 1%. That's probably the cancellation you have. So I guess it would probably be okay, but maybe worth checking. And also, yeah, you know, the running, you were asking about this, the running of G2, it's the one that runs the most, right, between the